your body than the brain. The reason the brain is protected so well is because there is an extremely prodigious rate of blood flow nourishing every darn one of those neurons. And that blood flow through your brain is an extremely good cooling substance. It's like the fluid flowing through your radiator. To try to heat up the brain material with that drastic amount of blood flowing through it, which then goes through the rest of your body and acts like a radiator of that heating, is such that you can sit here and come to the conclusion, let me drop, that you're creating excess heating of brain material and creating a brain tumor because of the rise in temperature due to the RF energy. You'd have to stop the blood flow in order to do that. And you stop the blood flow in the brain, the person becomes unconscious real fast. So you can see why. I don't think I've got the whole answer, but I'm extremely skeptical as to that being a mechanism of creating grief within a human being. The rate at which blood flows through the cartilage of your ear is something a heck of a lot slower. And it's somewhat confirmed that the extra heating of the earlobe that occurs because that's very close to the cell phone, and therefore people are developing earlobe cancer. If you made a case like that one, I could see the possibility of it being accurate. But to create brain tumors with RF energy, you can see I'm very skeptical. It's going to take a lot more evidence before I believe that one. Okay, the very next person who is going to sign in. Let me drop.
KB1THM.
KB1THM. Start up with your name, sir, and then if you want to make a comment on what has occurred, go right here with the comment. Please start up with your name. Make sure you wait for the beep.
Yeah, my name is Brandon. I'm here in Houston, Connecticut. No comment. I just turned my radio on here. I remembered this was the TechNet, and I did have a question for when you're done with this one, when it comes around to me.
Very fine, Brandon. Thank you. You signed in. And I think you were one of the people that was at the Ham Radio University at Briarcliff College in Old Brookville, New York, back in January. Is that true, Brandon? Go ahead.
No, I think you're thinking of someone else, probably. Nah. Yeah, I'd like to actually go to that and see what it's all about.
Okay. There's a slim chance we're not going to get to you tonight because there's two people ahead of you, Brandon. But if we don't get you tonight, because we don't and you did sign in and said you had a question, you will be number one on the runway next week, whenever you sign in next week. So if we don't get you tonight, we might not. Please remember to come back next week and you'll be number one on the runway. Alrighty. The next person who had a question or a comment tonight was Wesley. And Wesley, go right ahead. And if it is the subject of the excess energy of the motors that you have been investigating, limit the information a little bit because we have to take that in stages. It turns out that Mel and I have gotten a number of emails on that particular subject where some people are interested and some are not. So there's a certain amount of that they can tolerate and they can't tolerate beyond a certain amount. So we got to go easy on that one. Over to you, Wesley. N2XJN, K2RIW in the TechNet.
This is KB1THM. Put me on the list for next week because I can't stay too long right now.
Okay, Brandon, you're on the list for next week. Wesley, you've got it. Make sure you wait for the beep. Watch you watch.
Okay, well, the last time I took 7 minutes of your time, so I don't need much, and I'm going to keep it to the limit. Well, the number of people, let me drop. The number of people actually emailed me and approached me on the radio with a few questions. I just want to answer these questions. And just curious, in very short form. The people ask me how actually this current water works and is it real. So basically what you're doing is you're taking two electrodes into the glass jar filled with water. These two electrodes represent capacitor with dynamic characteristic. And these two electrodes are connected to the battery producing HHO gas. Jar is closed with a cap and a small hose is delivering HHO gas to the inlet of your car. that I have right now in regards to whatever technology changes. Now you have a parallel resonance circuit containing coil and capacitor with proof with tracking generator. And between the car battery and electrodes of the jar. So actually what is happening is that capacitor is with the coil and it creates resonance circuits. The generator is actually trying to track the resonance frequency of dynamic characteristic of this capacitor and trying to keep it in the resonance. What is happening is that right now you have only 2 to 4 ampere from the battery that is being taken, and before you had just the battery connected to this electrode without anything, the straightway it was around 20 amps. So now, not only you can use clear water without electrolyte, but you do not need any longer to be worried about your alternator running your car on water. The interesting approach is actually, instead of trying to do all of this work, is just to put the fire on that HHO gas from the hose and use Stirling engine. The Stirling engine is being known from the history as the steam engine. The only thing is that right now the Stirling engine is operated with compressed gas and does not need the steam any longer. Another one is trying to use the solar energy to power up that HHO compressor and then try to run the Stirling engine. The one interesting approach, just a few words about the spark. A spark in your car, that's a spark plug. If you want to have one that does not collapse any longer, all you got to do is take your spark out and do some modification. All you need is to put two magnets from each side of your spark plug, right in the middle of your spark plug. You may also experiment with toroidal magnets. Cut completely the horizontal element, leaving just the center of the spark plug. This kind of spark plug will be producing plasma around the center of the main pin. The magnetic field will make perfect circle distribution of plasma from the central pin of the plug. You will never be in need to change it again. The distribution of the plasma will be evenly circular. The current will then be spread through the circle, causing smaller current in geometry of plasma circles. This will make the spark almost spark plug almost indestructible. Another is how to putting fuel with the water, not HHO, just with the water. This was provided by the number of people in Russia, and then actually happened to be tested by the Russian Moscow Institute. All you're doing is you just take the old motor saw, the one that you use for the wood from Home Depot, remove all the elements, leaving the engine intact. Instead of the gas tank, use the glass jar, which is with the cover, which is filled with 80% of water and 30% of gasoline. Exhaust pipe gases are directed into the jar, causing rotation and mixing water with gasoline. Then this mixture is delivered to intake of the engine. Your car will burn water vapor with gasoline. It is proven that water vapor gives much more energy than gasoline, and typical car efficiency on gas is 20%. using water converted to HHO, 96%, but in reality only 63%. The last thing that I want to do is very interesting. That's the information about invention of the member of Russian Science Academy, Dudushev. What he was trying to do is, because there is a static difference of potential between Earth's ionosphere, Earth and the ionosphere, the easiest way to get this electricity from to work for you for heating and cooling your house is simply that's the button of Dudushev. Use a laser beam in order to ionize ionosphere. So actually from the Earth you put the laser beam, and then the high voltage will flow to the ground through that laser beam.
What I'm hearing, Wesley, is that you're doing research and looking into quite a number of techniques of getting higher efficiency out of electrolyzing water, among other things, using it for water injection of automobiles. And of all these techniques you're looking into, which are potentially capable of giving excess energy, free energy, but excess energy, have you seen enough evidence to date that you personally are willing to invest in one of these machines, that you're willing to own the hardware and start using it? Have you seen enough evidence so far that you personally, Wesley, is willing to put your money into that machine and own it and use it at your QTH? And maybe the answer is not yet. But do you think that as you proceed with that research, that you're willing to make that leap and make that investment into XJN, K2RIW and the TechNet?
Okay, into XJN. Yes. The answer is yes. I already spoke to one friend of mine who has a very unique manufacturing. A long time ago, there were plenty of small businesses in manufacturing. Right now, there's almost none. The friend has a manufacturing of small electronic boards from over 70 years. For over 7 years, that means he is a second generation, actually third right now generation. And these guys, when you drive through the highway, you see that this light, the yellow light blinking, this is the manufacturer who actually makes them. He also makes number of lights for the police department, for the army, and for the marines. Now, he promised me that if I do that capacitor with that glass, that is actually, that means that chamber that is manufacturing the HHO, he will do the electronics. Is from very, very much skeptic, I turn to the enthusiast. I believe in it. It is working. It is just right now to find the proper schematic. I'm analyzing all the possible sources. It's very hard. 2 months ago, if the number of information was 6, I remember I said it once, 6, let's say 600, doesn't matter. Right now it's 6,000. It is like epidemic. People are jumping into it because the economy is bad. People do not have a job, and they worry. They suspect anything. They suspect conspiracy theory, whatever it is. People want to do it. Now we have an official Academy of Science. People publish something. A few days later, you have 200 of responses. When other people say this is not working, this is working, I will change that. benefits from mass consolidation, the power of internet actually, and the economy that is struggling, put people to work together. Now, one thing that I believe in it, I believe that the very close technology that is not related to HHO very much, but it uses actually the gasoline that is mixed with fuel, with water. This technology works. In other words, it's 20% of gasoline, 80% of water. That mixture, when you deliver that mixture with the particles of water, water vapor, in very tiny particles, it will actually work with the engine. I've seen it tested, of course not in real, but I've seen it tested, and I believe, and my knowledge says this is not something that is not true. And a number of people in Russia actually replicate that it works. That they even say, stop your oppression, because in Russia it's still communist. Give the people freedom of choosing what they want to pay for. Yes, I am trying to right now find the proper technology, get into it, and make it for myself and use it. And in both, one is in neodymium magnetic motors that claim to have over-unity. I already understand where this over-unity appearing and how is that over-unity showing. I just need to make sure that before I say something on the net, I will be fully prepared to that. Back to the SSV.
I want to make a comment on that. Okay, person who wants to make a comment, we'll get to you in a second. I'm hearing the sound of significant commitment on Wesley's part. It sounds to me like sometime in the next 6 months, I'm making a guess, he is going to make the investment, he's going to own the hardware that does these improvements. And we'll be hearing those reports. Sounds like an exciting area. You know there's a good deal of skepticism out there. And therefore, it's a little bit of an uphill battle to convince people that that these things really have the benefit that's claimed. And there are a few people out there that are selling things that do not really produce what they claim. The person who wanted to make a comment, please give me your call letters and your name. K2LIW in the TechNet.
This is KC2UJL from Brooklyn, New York. My name is Tony. And I work on motorcycle engines. I work on car engines. And there's no way that you can introduce water into a cylinder head of an engine without causing it to seize. Okay? It's the same thing as if you blew a head gasket. And mixing water and gasoline and introducing it into a cylinder head under no circumstances, I don't care what the compression factor would be, but you would seize the motor, okay? Because it was in the oil, and it caused a multitude of problems within the cylinder head, okay? So I mean, I don't know what's going on here, but you know, I've been working on motorcycles for the last 25 years. And, you know, I just got to say what I had to say. Okay, Wes, what can I tell you? Dick, back to you.
I see where you're coming from, Tony. A significant number of people have reported over the years that their car behaves better on a rainy day, that a small amount of highly vaporized water vapor injected into the carburetor does slightly improve automobile performance. A lot of people have reported that. Now, the water that gets injected into an engine because of a failure of the head gasket, which is not properly atomized water, and the engine runs very poorly, that's not a good example. So, an extremely small amount of water, properly atomized, does appear to make some improvement. That might be worth pursuing. But I don't blame you for being skeptical. On your motorcycle engines, of course you want to avoid water. Okay, let's go on to the next person who had a question tonight, and that was Bob, W2ILP. Go right ahead with your question or comment, Bob. KQLIW in the Tech Net.
Just let me have a final comment.
This is Bob, W2ILC. Wesley, you want to say something, go?
Okay, I just want to have a final comment, November to X-ray Juliet November. For those who do not believe, please email me. I'm going to send you the links, the literature that you can read, and the video clip that you can see. That it works and it's going to work. And if you are professionals with the cars, with the car engines, you're going to understand that there is no way that this thing is not going to work. And that actually explain how that system works. We don't have a time for it right now. So would you please, on QRZ.com, that is my email, and I'll be welcome to read your notes. Thank you very much. And to XJ.
Hi, Dick. Let's drop everything for a minute so let it all recycle. Roger. We'll all sit quiet for a minute. That's not letting it recycle. Now, hold on, everybody. Eric, the man who runs the machine, is asking for complete silence for a while he resets everything. We were all piling on top of each other. Give me another minute. Roger.
You are currently connected to Reflector 9126.
Keep standing by. Stand by, Bob. Every time you do that, it makes it more difficult, man. Just hang on a second. Go ahead. Ask Bob to go to the Eastern Link because the noise is just unreadable. Yeah, Bob, it looks like the propagation changes late each night. I think you're gonna have to use the Eastern input for 147.375. W2ILP, I'll copy Bob, K2RIW in the TechNet.
And the yellow frequency, I'll copy me, go.
You sound good. Make sure you drop long enough and please proceed.
Okay, this is Bob, W2ILP, in regard to some of the things that Wesley has said. And at one time when I was field service engineer, I had the pleasure of working with B-52s that were being modified for a special radar warning system. And while seeing one taxi down the runway, I saw it emit a lot of liquid. So I got real excited and I told this master sergeant, hey, there's fuel coming out of that B-52. And he said, that's not fuel. He said, that's water. He said, for high performance takeoffs, they inject water vapor into the jet engines. And when they're not going to do a high performance takeoff, they sometimes jettison the water. So this is nothing unknown, that you can get better performance when you inject water vapor into fuel. But also you got to be very, very careful, because you may become the laughing stock of your own theories. I'll let it drop. A long time ago, during the Cold War, after World War II, there was a company in America called Otis T. Carr. I don't know if Dick knows about them, but they were basically a lithographing company. And what they did for the government is they produced a lot of propaganda pamphlets on systems that weren't. And a friend of mine who was a physicist had the opportunity to get interviewed by Pratt & Whitney, because he was listening to you on a nuclear program, and they showed him one of the breakfast from Otis T. Carr. And after he looked at it, he started to laugh. And they said, "Why are you laughing?" He says, "Because this is a perpetual motion machine that's impossible to work. This is a plan for something that is impossible by the laws of conservation of energy." And needless to say, he got the job, or the job. A long time ago, when I was in high school, I used to read a lot of popular mechanics magazines. And one of the magazines was very interesting to me because it was covering some of the material we were learning in science. Yes, we did learn science in those days because we had a difference between academic and commercial courses. And people didn't take an academic course without the idea that they were going to have to learn some science. So what happened was, there was an article in the Popular Mechanics magazine where somebody that they could prove they could destroy energy. I'll let it drop.
I see it's a little bit too high.
So they said they thought they had a method of destroying energy, and what they did is they compressed the coil spring and they put it in hydrochloric acid and let it melt, and they said, "Where did the potential energy of the coil spring go?" Well, the editor of Popular Mechanics magazine, I think it was at that time, he figured out the solution. He got another vial of another beaker of the same acid, and he put the coil spring into that acid without compressing it. And just after the coil spring was completely dissolved, he measured the temperature. The temperature the acid where the coil spring had been compressed was hotter than the temperature in the acid where the coil spring was not compressed. So the energy went into heat. And this is something that I think if people knew a little bit more about the conservation of energy and a lot of things that are going on in this world today, they wouldn't fall for things like the theories of global and so forth that they're getting. But I did want to talk more about the problem with the toilet, but I don't know again if Dick wants me to do so. So I'll send it back to Dick from W2L. Here you go.
A comment, KC2UJL.
KC2MDP with a comment. Tony and MDP in that order. Tony, go ahead.
I'm listening to this, whatever you call it. Anyway, you know, I was schooled by Honda, okay? I work on motorcycles for quite a long time. And what they're talking about years ago, the valve sticking of the motors, sometimes when you would gas up the carburetor and introduce a little bit of water into the carburetor, it would clean the valves of the engine. But if you know yourself, Dick, if you had a gas station, they would go around sticking the tanks with a special chemical to make sure there was no water in the fuel mixture, is because it would break down the content of the fuel, okay? The octane content by introducing water to fuel, okay? The motorcycle engine or the car engine operates considerably only on one condition, the mixture of air and fuel. Very slight amount of fuel into the air intake, it goes into the engine, and then it goes into the cylinder head, and it's exploded by the carburetor. We were going back to, carburetor there. So, I mean, in all the years I've known, and I've built motorcycles and worked on car engines, I never heard this in my life. And what can I tell you? But there's no way that you can take any fuel and introduce water to it without deducting the octane mixture of the fuel. Bottom line, KC2 UJL.
And I have a comment too.
Tony, you're absolutely right. We should never put water into gasoline in a tank, whether that's to be the tank at the gas station or the tank of our automobile, for an extremely good reason. The water and the gasoline separate from each other. You're eventually going to get a pool of water in the bottom of the tank because I think the gasoline is lighter, and at some time your tank is going to be sucking up pure water. And so you'll never get the mixture correct if you mix it in the fuel, the raw fuel, before it goes to a carburetor. What I'm pretty sure Wesley is talking about is taking a known amount of fuel, injecting it into a carburetor, a known amount of water, properly vaporizing it, injecting it into the carburetor, and if all the operation is taking place at the carburetor, you now truly have control of fuel-air mixture, fuel-water mixture, and some benefit can take place there. And it's also well known that B-52 aircraft do take off with water injection, because the water injection, when done properly at the jet engine of a B-52, does give them extra thrust on takeoff. So when properly controlled at the point of use, water injection into an internal combustion engine or a jet engine can have some benefit. But to mix it directly into the fuel, of course that's wrong. It'll never come out right most of the time. I agree with you there. Steve was the next person who signed it. KC2MDP. Go right ahead, Steve. K2LIW in the TechNet.
Okay, Dick, thank you very much. Yeah, I can understand where Wesley is coming from, and I can also understand where you're coming from with injecting water into the engine of a B-52. My assumption would be that all it's really doing is increasing compression. You know, basically, you know, like a hot rod, you know, they used to use the nitrous. Nitrous is an inert gas. It does nothing except increase compression. Now, whether you're going to get any fuel savings on this is another story, but I can understand, yeah, it would increase compression. It would, maybe to the naked ear, it would sound like the engine is running better, but all you're doing is increasing compression. Back to you.
Dick? Wesley, stand by. Eric, go ahead.
It's a pretty well-known fact when you add water vapor to an internal combustion engine, there's two things happen. The rate at which the fuel burns slows down slightly, but a very fine vaporization increases the amount of volume in the expansion process, so you actually get a more push against the piston, so to speak, because you have a larger volume of gas in the same period of time.
That sounds good. I know that when you take water from the liquid form and boil it so that it comes into steam, it has something like 1,000 times more volume for water vapor as steam as opposed to liquid water. So in the case of a jet engine, when you inject water into the exhaust system of a jet engine, the total volume of fluid, meaning gases, that come out of the tail feathers, the exhaust turbine and the nozzle, so to speak, of the jet engine, the total volume of gases coming out is drastically increased, and therefore you get more thrust.
And it's after the combustion chamber, and that's why it's thermodynamic, and you get that increased stress.
So in the case of a jet engine, we get more thrust when we inject the water downrange. In the case of a piston engine, you get more volume of expansion when the cylinder fires if you've got just the right ratio of highly vaporized water. Is that approximately what you're saying, Eric? Wait for the beep.
Yeah, but it costs you in heat. You're actually absorbing the energy that's in the form of heat energy to do that expansion.
Okay? If you had the choice of an internal combustion piston type engine that did not or did use properly metered, properly atomized water vapor into that engine, do you believe you would come out ahead to use the water vapor in that engine? Would you do that if you had the option? Over to you, Eric.
No, actually I wouldn't, because what happens is you get cooling. There's a whole lot of things that go on. People who claim they get better mileage in misty, damp weather, they don't really get better mileage. They get a little bit better acceleration at that point, particular point in time. You know, if I'm going to do anything with water, I'm going to turn it into combustible material. So water vapor, unless you turn it into some form of plasma, and you're talking about very high temperatures that don't exist in the engine, and if you get there, you're looking at the component failing. So what we're really talking about is a, you know, state change of material, not a combustion.
Wesley recognized. We'll get to you in a second. Eric, if the water vapor injection into the engine, you told me, gives you extra thrust, extra acceleration, that sounds beneficial. Tell me why I wouldn't want to keep doing that. Over to you, Eric.
Well, if you're taking heat energy, look, you only get a certain amount of energy out of something, okay? When you burn gasoline, I don't remember, I can look it up exactly what the value is. You get X number of calories of energy out of it. A certain amount of that energy is wasted, okay? It gets absorbed by the block, it gets carried off by the water system in the car. When you put water into it, it absorbs a certain amount of that heat energy, okay? And some of that heat energy is being used to take that water vapor and do a state change and turn it into a gas. So what it's really doing is you're turning it into finer water molecules that are more spaced apart from one another. The process of that is using heat, okay? You can't make the engine more efficient, because if you have an engine that has a water system that is taking away X number of calories of heat from the block is absorbing X number of calories of heat, you still only have a certain amount of calories of energy that's occurring in the first place. If you were to, say, slow down the water system and keep the actual combustion temperature in the engine constant, then you're getting an advantage. But just a typical car, and by the way, most cars don't have carburetors anymore. They have mass airflow sensors and butterfly valves. The computer tends to want to compensate for what's going on there. And plus, you really don't want the water vapor in the engine, because there's other things going on too, but that's why when you look at your exhaust pipes, when they finally rot through and you have to have them replaced, it's from water vapor, because one of the products of combustion is water vapor.
I got another comment.
So I think you're saying there's more disadvantages than advantages, and you wouldn't do it. Wesley, I think you want to make a comment on this. Your reading to date has led you to believe that there's more advantages than disadvantages. Am I correct in that assumption, Wesley? In 2XJN, K2RIW in the TechNet? Wait for the beep.
Okay, November to X-ray, Juliet, November. Here's the explanation. The exhaust gases are being actually put inside this jar where you have 20% of fuel and 80% of water. This mixture starts to bubble, and then this mixture is then delivered to intake of that engine. Now, what's happening is it's already hot, it's already mixed, and that very tiny, very small particles of water, in accordance to the explosion that is created by that gasoline, also in vapor, actually, they react like HHO, that is already the gas. It's much easier to get the energy from that. That's how it works. So you have a closed circuit, But of course, part of these gases are going out. There is a piston outside the engine on the exhaust part that is actually moving back and forth. Gets like this gases partially into the jar. And that anybody who says it's not going to work, let me put the bet. I'm going to put on the table $100 if somebody convinces me that this is not true. I'm going to send all of the information that I have and let you just judge by yourself. And to Israel.
Okay, well, I'd like to make a comment when I get a chance.
Now, don't you think that the auto companies would already do something like that if it was efficient and it was a good practice?
Wesley has made an offer. If you send him an email to N2XJN, he will give you a copy of these websites describing this process. You can go to those websites and make your own judgment. And Wesley also said he's willing to put up money to bet that there is a benefit. Eric, I can tell, is quite skeptical. I don't know. And for those who want to investigate it, he's giving you the references by which you can also investigate it. There was another person who wanted to make a comment. Who was that? Please wait for the...
Play 2 WKV.
Yeah, well, when you get a chance, just this comment, Dick, I want to make a comment.
Okay, person who said he wanted to make a comment, you're next, and after that it's going to be George. Was that you, Tony? Go ahead.
Yeah, I want to make a comment to you. It's just common sense. If you anybody who's rebuilt the motor, you know, any type of, even if you take a crankshaft of an engine, you gotta wear rubber gloves. Even the sweat from your fingers, if you touch that crankshaft, you contaminated that crankshaft. When you put the bearings in there and you torque that crankshaft down, eventually that sweat that you got on your fingers as you touched that crankshaft is gonna cause a contamination problem for the crankshaft. Now, I wanna see you take a Ferrari or a Porsche and put water in one of them engines. I mean, you know, listen to me. Whatever he wants to say, he can say. But I've been rebuilding engines for a long time, and Dick, listen to me. I'll put $10,000 up to his $100, okay? But I've worked on motors for a long time, and I know that for a fact, that water in a cylinder head is going to cause contamination, it's going to cause rust, and other problems, okay? And that's the bottom line. Anybody that's worked on a motor will know that. I mean, whatever this experiment was, and especially with that plane you're talking about, that's a propeller plane. That wasn't a jet plane, okay? So, what can I tell you? I have my own shop. I worked on Harleys. I worked on Hondas. I worked on Triumphs. I worked on any kind of motorcycle you can name, Dick. But what can I say? I mean, if that's what he wants to believe, you know, whatever, put $2,000 on the table. But it doesn't make any sense in the law of mechanics. What can I tell you? I don't want to be argumentative, but that's just my comment.
Take a while.
And let George in there. He's an auto guy.
Yeah, George and then Bernie in that order. And, Tony is a guy who's been there, and he's had hard experience, and it's hard to counter. Also, the B-52 is a jet engine airplane. It's got, I think, 6 jet engines, by the way, in 3 nacelles. Maybe it's 8. I think it's got a total of 8 jet engines, 4 on each wing. And pilots will sometimes make a joke that one of the jet engines goes out. The B-52 is making one of those very, very dangerous 7-engine landings. But those are jet engines. George, W2WKV, what's your experience with all this? K2RIW, wait for the beep and look at your watch, George.
Hey, good evening, everybody. I've been restraining myself, but I'd like to state a few things. First off, Eric, the reason the old systems, the old exhaust systems, which were made of ordinary steel, would rust out quite rapidly is that byproduct of lousy distilled gasoline is sulfurous acid, which turns to sulfuric acid when it breathes atmospheric air, the normal air that we have. That's the reason they used to rust out. If you would look under the chassis of any modern car, you'll see that the exhaust system, the cats and everything else, are now made of stainless steel with very few joints, mostly MIG welded in place. The reason being to avoid those rust spots, which are caused, again, primarily by acid produced from lousy gasoline. First item. Second item. Many years ago, I owned a 1947 Dodge with a six-cylinder Windsor Chrysler engine, which was a reliable. It was used in cabs, and it was used in trucks, and it was a flathead six-cylinder engine that just ran and ran and ran. I think they ran. I even had a boat. I think it was rated around 120, 130 horsepower. My particular car came from somebody else, came with a device installed. It looked like a mason jar. It was bolted to the firewall, connected to a vacuum hose, connected to a device that looked like an insert between the carburetor and the intake manifold. It theoretically injected a mixture of water and alcohol into the airstream. I felt, and I owned this car for quite a while, the car ran pretty well. I never burnt any valves out. I felt that the car went just as normal as a production car without the device. The device cost the previous owner around $100 installed. I believe there were thousands sold in the 50s and 60s. But it was a farce. It did nothing. There was no greater power. The car didn't perform better. The mileage was not better. But they were injecting a mist composed of alcohol. I used isopropyl alcohol, and I used water.
Repeater, timeout. Repeater, timeout. Cancel.
Watch my watch.
Erica, were you listening on the input, and how much of the 1 minute timeout did you hear? I heard a lot of it. Okay, he wants you to describe that engine that you owned.
Actually, George is better qualified. It's an Atkins cycle engine. It's not an Otto cycle engine, which is a typical four-stroke engine. This Atkinson cycle engine is considered to be a variable stroke engine, but George, why don't you explain it? You're really good at it, and do it in short bits.
It was introduced in the particular car that you were driving to increase the economy, and it works, as you witnessed. It's a five-cycle engine. The fifth cycle is a purge cycle. After the exhaust cycle, the fifth cycle is just a purge cycle, just to keep it simple. Do you follow me on that? Do you agree with me on that? With my memory correct, let me rephrase that. Eric?
You're right on, George. Keep going.
It purges the cylinder clean, so when the initial charge comes in on the first compression stroke, the cylinder is clean and clear. There's no burnt or unburnt matter in it. It gets a clean charge of a gas-air mixture at the proper ratio as determined by the intake manifold and everything else. So it runs more efficiently. Bottom line. Correct, Eric?
All right, there's a caveat that goes with that. The power stroke on that particular engine does not operate efficiently at idle speed. And the way they get this to happen is they actually leave the intake valve open while the previous valve is on a downstroke with drawing in. So it actually cleans out that cylinder that's sitting right next to it at the same time. You believe, George?
I honestly don't remember.
All right, well, that's the way they do it. That particular engine is mostly efficient at 4 to 5,000 RPM. If you let that engine idle, you suck up gas very quickly because it's not really efficient at that particular part of the power curve. But because it's a hybrid, because the lower speeds are actually assisted by the motor, it becomes a very efficient device, and you can start that engine up as fast as 300 milliseconds.
Dick, you want to pick it up?
I've got a question for you, Eric, and that is, if this is a five-stroke engine or a five-cycle engine, an ordinary four-cycle engine fires on every other revolution. If this thing has a cleaning cycle, that sounds like it's firing on every third revolution. Would I be correct then to assume that this engine is going to give me approximately two-thirds of the amount of horsepower for that amount of displacement because it is not firing quite as often? KE2EJ, K2LAW in the TechNet.
Oh, that's not exactly the case. Don't forget, everything is run electronically in that vehicle, including the valves. But what they do is they split up the process. There's a certain amount of displacement that occurs where nothing in a four-cycle engine happens, where they use that advantage by leaving the intake valve hang open as it pulls down into the next cycle before it actually gets the injection, which allows the previous cylinder to create, so to speak, to create a vacuum and suck out the unburnt gases, pull that into the next cylinder, use that with the mixture, and burn the unburnt gases along with the fresh fuel.
Now, with an ordinary engine that only partially exhausts what's in the cylinder that has just fired, I'm about to pull in a brand new mixture. Let's assume now that the cylinder that has just fired 10% of the leftover stuff is still in the engine, and on the next intake cycle I'm going to pull in a fresh supply of fuel and air. Why does that not give me an opportunity to burn up anything that was left over from the previous cycle? What's the advantage of completely cleaning out a cylinder as opposed to not completely cleaning that particular cylinder for the next firing cycle? KE2EJ, K2LAW.
It's all a matter of volume, Dave. When the engine is running where it is most efficient, okay, where there's this, don't forget, gasoline doesn't burn as quickly as some other fuels. Gasoline burns so slowly that we actually fire the spark off anywhere between 8 and 5 degrees before the cylinder gets to top dead center, because it takes time for the fuel to burn. As you get into the higher revolutions and the higher level of compression, don't forget, the amount of leftover gas, when the piston pushes up, there's still a certain amount of gap between the piston head when it's at top dead center, the valves, the milling that's there in the head, so, you know, there's a certain amount of buffer so that the cylinder doesn't hit the head. The valve has to be able to extend down without the piston hitting the valve. So there's a certain volume there that is what they call a dead zone. And it's that gas that has a little bit of combustible material, a little bit of material that's been combusted there. Take that into the next cylinder, mix that with the new fuel, and you've got a more efficient combustion.
What's the advantage of moving that to the next cylinder as opposed to keeping it in that cylinder and mixing it with a fresh supply and burning the whole mixture? I'm having a little trouble understanding, why is there an advantage to transfer that to the adjacent cylinder? Over to you, Eric.
Give me a minute, and I'll give you the exact answer. I've got a little paper here that's going to explain it better than I can, and as soon as I find it, I'll give you the answer.
Okay, Bob and Wesley in that order. Go ahead, Bob.
Well, many years ago, again, everything I say starts in with many years ago. I was working for Emerson Radio, And it is, we're coming out about Crown Gas in New Jersey had a higher octane than any gas that was being sold at that time. And I said, how could this be so if Crown Gasoline has the cheapest price? I mean, gas was selling for 24 cents elsewhere, and it was 20 cents there. It's a high test.
Go to you, Bernie, so hang in there for a minute. Go ahead, Eric.